This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and I almost forgot the slogan halfway through like you did a couple weeks ago. Wow.
Yeah, well,
it's all really sinking in at this point. Like, you know, just like whatever we need to do to get through the episode, this part of history.
Okay. Maybe we need a new slogan.
Have any.
Yes. There you go. All right.
So no, everything I just said was our new slogan. Okay. It's like 90 seconds long, and it's very depressing.
Okay, great. All right. So this episode, so we're calling it on the agenda here. We've called it go-to meals. I've been thinking of it as repertoire meals.
Yes, and I was also thinking of it as repertoire, and then I like tried to find the repertoire agenda and saw that it wasn't called that, and I was like, okay, Abby wouldn't let us call the episode that, and she's probably right.
Okay. So, Matthew, let's talk about memory lane of like go-to meals in your family.
So when I was growing up, I definitely remember the go-to meal that I most remember was roast chicken.
Okay.
And it was neither my favorite nor least favorite. It was a thing that appeared. I remember it being like once a week. That might be an exaggeration. We would have to get mom of the show, Judy Amster, to weigh in on that. And of course, you know, definitely I remember other stuff. But like when I think of like what was one of my mom's go-to meals when I was growing up? Roast chicken.
And just to make sure I understand, this is in the era before like store-bought rotisserie chickens, right?
Oh, no, this was a home roasted chicken.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So, and then what, do you remember what she would serve with the roasted chicken?
Oh gosh. Always like some kind of vegetable side, like, you know, it could be like broccoli or like peas and carrots or I'm trying to think what popular forms of potatoes I ate growing up. I don't really remember.
So did you guys, did Judy go in for like roasted potatoes with rosemary? Like one of those things that sort of made the rounds of American menus and things in the 1990s, the early 90s.
Yeah, I don't really remember that.
No? Okay. Well, so I think roast chicken was also a go-to meal for my family. My dad would always roast the chicken.
Oh.
And he definitely bought into the idea of like rosemary roasted potatoes. So that was a thing.
Oh, I see. So you introduced that just so you could like pay it off by talking about how your dad was a rosemary potato man.
Yeah. He was the inventor of Altoids.
Uh-huh.
He was an endive man. And a
do you
rosemary
think there are like some people who like
man.
Picked up, like started listening to this show maybe like 6 months ago and believe that your dad really invented Altoids?
I hope so.
Okay.
I hope so.
Remember, have you seen the movie Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion?
I have not.
I've seen it. I think I've only seen it once, but for a while, back when there were video stores, we used to always rent videos at Broadway Video at Broadway and Republican in Seattle, which has been closed for many, many years because it was a video store. Mm-hmm. And every time we went in, they would always have Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion playing like on the TV hanging from the ceiling in the store. It was their favorite movie.
Yes, the TV hanging from the store in every video rental store.
Every, yeah, the two movies I I remember seeing played in the store were that and RoboCop. And in Romy and Michelle's high school reunion, they have to like come up with a story about like what cool thing they did since graduating from high school because they don't have anything. And so they say that they invented Post-its.
Oh, awesome. Wow. What a good thing to invent. Uh-huh. I love that. Okay. But back to my dad,
yes.
the Altoids inventor. So, okay. So he had the roast chicken and like rosemary potatoes meal. And then after that, the chicken would get turned into usually like a big salad that we would eat the next night mm-hmm. with his homemade vinaigrette. And so that was kind of like a 1-2 punch of go-to meals.
Oh, we're going to talk about 1-2 punches later. I like that term.
Okay. And then my mom, I think of her go-to meal being this thing that I think she actually picked up from some diet she did in mm-hmm. the early 80s. Like, I don't know if this was Weight Watchers or if this was like, I mean, my mom did all the weird diets, like the grapefruit diet.
Nutrisystem?
She did. I do think she did Nutrisystem. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think mm-hmm. my mom did Nutrisystem also.
Oh, my God. Anyway, yeah, but what this was, we called it breakfast for dinner. I think we've done a breakfast for dinner episode
we have,
or
yeah.
something, right? But anyway, this was a frequent meal in our house, and it was steamed spinach, not even sauteed, steamed spinach with an over easy egg and then grated sharp cheddar cheese.
Yeah, I remember you talking about this probably on the breakfast for dinner episode and me saying, like, if I had had this presented to me as a kid as breakfast for dinner, like, I would have done like one of those divorced my parents things.
Yes, yes. I think back on it now, and I'm like, I mean, I actually liked it, but like my mom...
It sounds good to me now.
Yes. My mom and dad would, you know, would like stack the things, right? As you can mm-hmm. imagine, would make it taste better. Like, you know, the fried egg, you get the yolk all up in the spinach and the cheese melts on top of the fried egg. No, I wanted it all in like separate piles, of course. But yeah, I remember liking this. And I have to say that I am grateful for the way that it paved the way to a lot of happy meals in adulthood for me of having eggs for dinner. Like, I love
yeah.
eggs for dinner. And we're going to talk about that a lot here in a second.
So we often have eggs as a component of dinner, but rarely as like the central thesis.
Central thesis.
I don't know why I said that.
Oh, okay. Anyway,
it's
so
because
wait,
we started by we said repertoire a bunch of times. That's why.
Do you have any other go-to meals from childhood? Because so I just thought of another one.
My dad was a steak maker, and I remember when we got a gas grill for the first mm-hmm. time. And so once we did that, grilling became a more frequent thing because it was easier to like light
right.
it up.
Right.
And so my parents would get some steak from like Costco often. And my dad would grill the steak. And that was certainly a favorite of us kids.
Do you remember what else you'd eat with the steak?
No, I seem to have like a really like vague memory of side dishes. like the main dish remains, but the side dishes have like faded into just like a blur at the edge of the plate.
This goes against like every magazine's thesis about Thanksgiving.
Well, I mean, I do remember the Thanksgiving side dishes.
Fine.
But
fine.
No, I see what you mean. Like side dishes are usually like better than the main course, right?
Yes, yes. I think so.
I do too. Rosemary anyway. Potatoes, for example, one
sure.
of my favorites.
Sure.
I came up with it in like 1983.
I can't even tell you the last time I bought rosemary. Like now when I see it in a recipe, I leave it out because then everything tastes like rosemary.
I think we have some rosemary growing on our balcony.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, you do have to be judicious with it, but I do like rosemary.
You know, I actually like it best of all, I think, like in breads or even in like crackers and things like that, as opposed to like, you know, I have this wonderful like Italian soups cookbook. I can't think of the name of it right now.
Is it called Wonderful Italian Soups?
Probably. Anyway, but like every single recipe in it has rosemary. But if I leave out the rosemary, it's a delicious soup. And if I add the rosemary, every soup tastes the same.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think of rosemary as like being essential for focaccia.
Yes, I agree. I like this. Yes.
It's weird okay. how this turned into the rosemary episode. episode. Wait, you mentioned rosemary, and now the whole episode tastes like rosemary. You're right.
Nice one. Okay, but wait, hang on. I just thought of another go-to yes. meal from my childhood. And this one I think of as being what my dad and I would eat when my mom was off somewhere else, like at a meeting or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so generally it would involve a hot dog in some form. So either, don't even start with me, either... Okay. Either my dad would make what he called a hot dog omelet. My dad was very good at making omelets, believe it or not.
Until the point where he threw a hot dog into it.
Right. No, so he would cut up a hot dog into like little coins mm-hmm. and fold it into my omelet. And I thought this was like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, no, I would have thought that was like Nobel Prize level right? genius as a kid.
Right? Yes. Anyway, either there would be a hot dog omelet. We would have hot dog omelets or cheddar cheese omelets, but hot dog omelets, or he and I would just have hot dogs, no bun, hot dogs on a plate with baked beans. And of course, he would get canned baked beans mm-hmm. and then he would doctor the can of baked beans. As I think we may have discussed,
he was a doctor. And so he had a license to doctor anything, including beans.
As we may have discussed in like a baked beans episode or something. My dad was a really good doctorer of canned baked beans. Mm-hmm. Now, however, whenever I buy...
Was he on call? Like, would his beeper ever go off and like somebody like, you know, Dr. Weisenberg, we've got a... there's a code in the bean department.
Oh my God, Matthew. Good Lord. Anyway, it's interesting, though, now because I think I buy the same brand of baked beans he did, but mm-hmm. I don't feel the need to doctor them. Like, I don't think they need anything.
Yeah, like canned baked beans are pretty good.
Right? Anyway, so yeah, but a hot dog like on a plate next to a puddle of baked beans. And that would be our like go-to meal when my mom was out.
Yeah, still sounds pretty good.
And it's interesting because it kind of makes it sound like my dad, like maybe, you know, was sort of one of those dads who doesn't usually cook. And
yeah,
so
I mean,
my mom
does sound like sort of like a sad divorced dad meal.
It
but
does.
Like, right.
But because my dad was usually kind of like a fussy cook who used like endive and things
right,
like that.
That's right.
This was actually like really this felt really special to me that this was the meal he and I could share.
OK, well. Do you think we should play like the like moving forward in time noise, like the wind chimes that bring us up to the present day and what and our
is it like?
Yeah, I think it's exactly like that. Yeah. Okay. Abby, okay. Pull out your soundboard and play that noise. What do you make today as when you think of like, how do we want to define go-to meals? Is it like how frequently it appears in your rotation? Is it like kind of the things you can make with like the minimal mental energy or without a cookbook?
Yeah. Okay. So for me, I think it's like one of three things or sometimes all three. Either it's something that I've made so many times that I don't need a recipe and mm-hmm. it just feels easy and like brainless.
Yeah.
Or it is something that I almost always have the ingredients for
right.
and so like can kind of throw together. Or it is just something that is so popular, we make it all the time, and maybe I still need a recipe for it, but like, you know, it's really popular in our household.
Okay, yeah. So, I like that definition.
So, Matthew, how about we sort of tack back and forth based on like the actual dish? So, for instance, the first one I want to talk about is beans and greens. And if you have something that's at all related to this, then you could talk about that. Afterward.
I don't think I do. So go ahead, kick us off with beans and greens.
Okay. So this is like wow. Let me try to get a sentence out.
This has left you speechless.
Okay. So Molly Stevens, who is a cookbook author and cooking teacher based in Vermont, I believe.
For
right?
just a second there, I thought you were about to talk about yourself in the third person. Like Molly, loves
Weisenberg.
Beans.
Molly Stevens published many years ago now this great book called All About Braising, which is one of those cookbooks. Like I tend to think of braising as this concept where like once you learn how to braise, like you don't need a whole cookbook about it. However, this cookbook is brilliant, and I use it all the time.
I'm looking at it right now. It's on my shelf right in front of me.
It's so solid. Anyway, Molly Stevens in there has a recipe that I believe she calls like braised escarole with cannellini beans or something like that. It's in the front section that has like vegetable braises. Well, so over time of making this dish, we have sort of altered it slightly to make it our own. And we now call it just beans and greens.
Mm-hmm.
It is my child's favorite meal, hands down. She asked for it for her birthday dinner on her 7th birthday.
Wow. I still, like, you've mentioned this so many times on the show, and like, it never gets any more believable.
Yeah, right? Anyway, so basically what you do is you cut up a head of escarole. If you don't have escarole, I use chard. If you don't have chard, you can use kale, but then my kid won't like it.
Okay.
Escarole, basically, you know, you've softened some sliced garlic and olive oil, a little bit of red pepper flakes. You put the escarole in there. You let it wilt. Molly Stevens uses dried beans that she has, you know, cooked separately. I always use canned beans. And instead of cannellini, I always use chickpeas.
Mm-hmm.
And I just drain them and rinse them. And once the escarole is wilted, dump in like 2 cans of drained and rinsed chickpeas.
Sure.
And a cup of chicken broth. And I just use better than bouillon chicken broth. Dump in a cup of that. Put the lid on. Let it ride for 20 minutes. And then finish it with lemon juice. And we eat that either with like some sort of potato, like roasted or boiled potatoes.
Maybe with a little rosemary.
Or more often, just with bread. And you finish it with a drizzle of olive oil. And you can serve it a little bit stewy if you want, or you can let more of the chicken broth sort of cook off at the end. But it is so easy. We always have beans in the cabinet. We always have garlic. We always have olive oil. And so if we've got a head of escarole, like, boom, we're set.
Okay. So speaking of heads of things.
Yeah. Wow, where are we going to go here?
Head cheese. No. Stir-fried chicken with cabbage.
That, tell me more.
That, to me, is like my quintessential go-to meal. So we usually have a cabbage, some proportion of a head of cabbage in the crisper drawer. I think currently we have 3/4 of a head of Taiwanese cabbage.
I have the same amount of the same type of cabbage.
Oh,
this is so exciting.
I've never felt closer to you.
Oh, my God. This is so touching.
Let's do it. Let's get married.
Okay. Listeners, we're finally going to do it. We're going to get together our 2 3/4 heads of cabbage and smush them together.
And make a family that comes together around 1.5 heads of cabbage all smooshed together.
Yes.
And we're not going to like break up with our current spouses
because
they're great.
No, we are going poly
we're
cabbage.
We're going poly cabbage. So I will take some chicken thighs and cut them into like 1/2-inch cubes and cut the cabbage roughly into chunks, and then stir fry the chicken and cabbage with, always some combination of garlic, ginger, and scallions, whatever sauce I feel like more, you know, usually something a little spicy. I'll put in some Sichuanese chili bean paste or another type of Chinese chili paste. Sometimes I'll take it in more of a Thai direction with fish sauce, but typically pretty much like Chinese home style stir fry.
Awesome.
And
do you have a recipe you've written up for this, or is this really just something that you just wing it?
It is really something I just wing it. I can talk through the whole thing in less than a minute.
Well, you just did.
Yeah. I cook the chicken first and sear the chicken first and set it aside. Then do the cabbage and the aromatics, toss the chicken back in, pour in the sauce, and, make sure everything's hot and serve it.
God, that's awesome. Love that.
With lots of rice.
Yes. Okay. Well, hold on. So speaking of rice, so we tend to, whenever we make rice, and maybe this is the case for everyone in the world who makes rice, we try to make lots of extra. So Ash grew up in a household. Ash's father is from South Korea. And when Ash was growing up, there was always, you know, a rice cooker full of rice on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
I am amazed that, Ash...
Yeah, that beeping you heard in the background a few minutes ago, that was our
rice cooker. Well, here's the thing with Ash's family's rice cooker. They would leave rice in it for like 3 to 4 days, and it would be like cold rice, and they would scoop it out and eat it, and no one ever got food poisoning. And I am shocked by this.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like the best way to do it.
Right? Anyway, Ash has over time convinced me, because I often find that rice that's been in the fridge for like more than a day, I don't really want to eat. It's kind of dry and stuff.
But then it's time to fry it.
Well, I know, but then what if it's been in the fridge for like 3 or 4 days? Then it's like really dried out. Do you still fry it?
Oh, you totally can.
Well, I know, I do, but I'm often like, ugh, this rice is really old.
But anyway. when rice is so old that it and like dried out that it has kind of a crumbly texture, that's when it makes the best fried rice, I think.
I'm learning a lot right now.
And if it's like, if it's picked up a little like, like fridge aroma, like that is going to be completely masked by the seasonings.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay. Well, anyway, so we have a lot of dinners where it's sort of just like rice. I know this is going to sound very boring, but rice with a fried egg on top.
Mm-hmm.
And some furikake for the other two members of my household. I usually add togarashi to mine. And then whatever kind of vegetable we have in the fridge, we roast and throw on top of it. So sort of a very minimal rice bowl. And then with the leftover rice, of course, we make fried rice, what you were just saying. And I have found... Well, I think I found last year, but this is really solidified for me during this COVID lockdown. My favorite sort of flavor combination for fried rice comes from this wonderful cookbook called Repertoire, which is...
Oh, no, you said it again.
I know. I said it again. Anyway, it's by Jessica Badalana, who is a really wonderful cook and cooking teacher now based in Portland, Maine. And what she seasons hers with, in addition to soy sauce and scallions and all of the important things, she uses this stuff called Golden Mountain Seasoning Sauce. Have you ever used it?
I am familiar with it. I don't think I've ever used it myself. But it's like a Maggie seasoning type of like soy sauce analog.
Exactly.
Sort of.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And it is like, for me, it is like the flavor of the fried rice of my childhood.
This sounds good, and I'm going to add some of this to my next Awaja Maya order.
Yeah, I really like it. It tastes like fried rice in a Chinese-American restaurant.
Yes, okay.
And I'm really into that. So anyway, yeah, Jessica Badalana's cookbook Repertoire, it's basically the companion cookbook to this episode of Spilled Milk. And anyway, I love her ingredients list and seasonings for fried rice.
Teenager of the show, Iris, is in the background preparing drying out the rice for some fried rice as we speak.
Hey, speaking of which, does Iris just lay it out on like a sheet pan and let it cool?
That is exactly what's happening this second.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Further updates as events warrant.
So talk about your fried rice.
I love Chinese sausage in fried rice, lap chong. So like take a link of that and chop it up and kind of just throw it in the pan with the aromatics. I like to get plenty of high heat on my fried rice. And I like fried rice that is really well broken up and like each grain of rice kind of has gotten like kind of encased in oil and gotten a little bit of char on it.
Okay, Matthew, hold on. I find this so difficult to do. So you and I, we also need to say for the listener, both you and I are cooking on very run-of-the-mill electric stoves.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it really challenging to make fried rice that actually gets like crispy and the like coated grains like you're talking about.
So I use a flat bottom.
Flat bottom.
I use a flat bottom wok, high heat. Get the oil smoking before I put the rice in and make sure that the rice has really been like sitting out and is dry and is not going to like cool things down by releasing a bunch of water when I throw it in.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That's all there is to it.
I think I need to get a new wok.
And also let it sit and you don't have to like keep it moving constantly.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I find that like if I kind of spread out the rice and kind of press it up against the, the base and the lower walls of the wok.
If we keep going through our things at this level of detail,
going
to be a 3-hour episode that's like every episode at once.
Great. Okay. Terrific. Let's go on to the next one then.
Okay.
Matthew, how do you make burgers at home? I see we both make burgers as a repertoire meal.
First of all, you can listen to our burger episode, which is some previous episode. It's okay. We'll link to it in the show notes.
Okay.
The other night, I made the best burgers I've ever made.
You did?
It just, everything came together. It was partly like having the right ingredients on hand. But okay, I made my own burger buns from the King Arthur Flour Beautiful Burger Buns recipe.
Okay.
I ground the meat myself in the KitchenAid food grinder attachment. beef chuck. I made some grilled onions, and I had some leftover homemade barbecue sauce from friend of the show, Kenji Lopez Alt.
Dear God, Matthew.
Homemade pulled pork, like oven pulled pork recipe. And so I made cheeseburger, and we had American cheese. So I made cheeseburgers with grilled onions and homemade barbecue sauce on homemade buns. And like, I don't think we even need to hear about your burgers at this point.
Matthew, I just want to say that if what the hell is a like go-to meal for you if it involves making every step from scratch?
Well,
that's fascinating to me.
That is not like how I make
you
burgers
usually
most of
do
the time.
It.
So usually it'll be like whatever ground beef is in the freezer.
Okay.
And like the, you know, $1.19 for 8 buns, like
yes.
QFC brand.
Yes. Okay.
American cheese, and that's it.
Great. Okay.
Maybe some A1 sauce. That is my go-to burger.
What I have been doing is much more like that. It is like a almost like a smash burger type thing. Where, we just take whatever meat we've got. I usually have like Franz hamburger buns, which I like because they get nice and squishy.
Oh yeah,
and
I love things that are nice and squishy.
Me too. And I'm not trying to make it like rare or medium rare. I'm just trying to get some nice, color on the outside, and they come together so fast. There's a great recipe on New York Times Cooking that we can link to. I think they call it like diner hamburgers or something.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's a good like template for just really quick stovetop kind of smash burgers.
Okay. So speaking of ground meat, I'm really nailing these segues today. Like one of our biggest go-tos is burritos or tacos with like, crispy shell tacos with homemade taco meat, which we talked about at mm-hmm. length on, I think, the hard taco episode and the taco salad episode.
Okay.
And homemade salsa usually. But if we don't have homemade salsa, jarred salsa is fine too. And then the next day, we'll take the leftover salsa and make chilaquiles.
Ah, your 1-2 punch.
1-2 punch.
Okay. You know, one thing I noticed as I was making this list of my go-to meals is that the majority of our go-to meals in our household are vegetarian.
Ours are not.
Which is not something that I consciously think about. It's just sort of the way it's happened. For instance, our favorite pasta to make at home, which again, I always have the ingredients for, is cacio e pepe, which is, generally some sort of a long noodle. And again, this is
you're
like,
generally some sort of a long noodle.
This is an Americanized version. This is not, I don't want to get into talking about what it would be like if we were actually eating this in Rome. We make it with spaghetti, pecorino romano, freshly cracked black pepper. And then the recipe that I use, which again is from Jessica Badalana's cookbook repertoire, does use some Parmesan cheese, which I know is sacrilege to some.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, mixture of those two cheeses is how I like it best. It is so good. My child calls it our macaroni and cheese.
Oh, nice.
And I love it. It's so fast and I always have everything for it. And it pleases me immensely.
Okay, I feel there are two different segues I could call upon here. Like,
oh, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Okay, I'm going to, speaking of long Americanized pasta dishes, there are two spaghetti dishes that we make regularly that are favorites. One is spaghetti carbonara, which we make in a very non-Italian sort of way in that we cook it in a skillet and it has cream in it, but it is good.
Mm-hmm.
And also usually just use like bacon, rather smoked bacon rather than pancetta. Or guanciale.
Yeah.
And then we make this dish called Salerno-style spaghetti, which is spaghetti with lots of garlic and olive oil and black pepper that is then topped with a fried egg and Parmesan cheese and topped with a fried egg and lots of crispy breadcrumbs.
Oh, that sounds
it's
really
so
good.
It's so great. And like when I say lots of crispy breadcrumbs, I think we usually double the we make a recipe for that's supposed to serve four and double the amount of breadcrumbs. And that's what we eat for three people.
Oh, my God. Would you share this recipe, please?
I think I can do that.
Okay. All right. There was another segue that you were going to get to from cacio e pepe.
Or alternatively, in another universe, speaking of our macaroni and cheese, baked pasta in the style of Al Forno restaurant, which we talked about a lot on the Crusty Corners episode.
Yes. I want to finish out my list of go-tos with sort of the simplest ones. I mean, actually, all of these are quite simple. But so as I said earlier in the show, we do a lot of eggs for dinner. And lately, something we have been doing Does your household have a whole bunch of like sort of dumb like names for different egg preparations?
I think you say, does our household have a whole lot of like dumb kids hanging around? I was like, it used to.
No. So, okay. Whenever we make fried eggs, we've only recently started calling them fried eggs. We used to call them flat eggs.
I remember that. That was so great.
That's what June used to call them. So, but I was a little bit sad the other day. We made a list of like, so June is just beginning orthodontia. And she has to eat soft foods. And so we made a list of soft foods. And I was really sad that what she wrote on it was fried eggs. Not flat eggs.
Yeah. I remember one time I came to your house and you made June flat eggs. I loved the term so much.
So lately we've been eating a lot of cheesy eggs, which, you know, obviously this name is not unique to us. but anyway, scrambled eggs with some Tillamook sharp or extra sharp cheddar folded in at the very, very end. I love these with nice amount of cracked black pepper.
I'm going to have that for lunch. Like of all the things we've talked about so far, like that seems like the most accessible that I could throw together for lunch. And yeah, it's going to happen.
Well, so, okay. A dinner I've been throwing together lately is cheesy eggs, which, you know, I'll make that on the stove, throw a pan of bacon in the oven. So bacon, cheesy eggs, and then either a big salad of like whatever greens, cucumber stuff we have, or you know, a whole bunch of like blanched green beans tossed with whatever, you know, seasonings and stuff. So yeah, cheesy eggs and bacon plus vegetable has been like a once a week dinner for us lately.
That sounds very good. You could almost call that breakfast for dinner.
For dinner. The other thing that I personally find so satisfying is I think Elizabeth David once wrote about like the pleasure of eating an omelet with a salad and a glass of red wine for dinner.
Yes, I know she talked about that because we did like a 12-minute bit about it a couple months ago.
I don't remember that.
It was about what book she wrote after that. I enjoyed that bit very much. I hope someone else did too.
I don't know. But anyway, left to my own devices, like my go-to meal, I think for at least most of the summer, like warm weather months, would be scrambled eggs, cheesy or not, and like a big salad, red wine, and some sort of bread.
I did not eat enough breakfast this morning. I had just like a small commercial yogurt.
I'm so sorry, dude.
I'm getting so hungry. I want a scrambled egg. I'm going to have lunch. Like, I'm starting work at like 11, so I think I'm going to have lunch of cheesy eggs at like 10:50.
Wait, I want to say one other vegetable.
Sorry, I wasn't trying to shut down the show, but I sort of was.
No, you were trying to shut down the show. I know what you were doing. So, in general, I am a big fan of like just roasting whatever vegetables we have. I think we talked about roasted kohlrabi recently, certainly roasted cabbage. Anyway, I occasionally will cook vegetables on the stovetop. Don't do it all the time. But one of the things that I love to do is a recipe from Rachel Roddy, who is a British food writer who lives in Rome. Mm-hmm. And she wrote
Third
this recipe.
Third cousin of Rowdy Roddy Piper. I think I said that last time also.
She wrote this recipe on her blog a million years ago. I just think of it as Rachel's zucchini. But you basically slice zucchini into like quarter inch thick coins. While you're doing that, you are sort of softening a couple of whole garlic cloves in olive oil. Mm-hmm. And then you fish the garlic cloves out. So you've got this garlic scented olive oil. You cook the zucchini until it's like nice and brown on each side and soft. And then you tear a whole bunch of fresh basil on top and eat it.
Wow. That sounds so different from anything that I ever make for dinner, but also sounds good. Like I would like you to make it for me someday.
It's very like what I would cook for dinner.
It is.
So,
and
yeah,
that's good. Like if we made a list of like, you know, a dish and like who makes it, Molly or Matthew, I think our listeners would get 100%.
Oh, big time. Big time. We should do that sometime.
Yeah,
for our listeners.
It's like we should we get to take all the quizzes?
That's true. That is true, Matthew. OK, wait. Do you have like one more thing you want to say? And
pizza.
Then we'll wrap up this marathon.
It's pizza. Just pizza.
Pizza.
Usually pan pizza, because I think that's the best pizza you can make at home. I'm making some Detroit pizza this week. It's going
to
be great.
Yeah. Go back and listen to what was the episode where we talked about
pan
Detroit
pizza.
Oh, my gosh. So that pan pizza that you make is so good. And I have said to myself so many times.
Self.
Make that Detroit style pizza. And I never do it because I just, like, I don't do a whole lot of multi-step cooking. these days.
But really, you just have to like get the crust ready day or two before. I mean, and like the rest is it just comes together in a few minutes.
I know.
Like and like the day you're gonna
Maybe
make
I'll
it, you have the
it.
Crust just sitting in the fridge. And like, you know, you're gonna, other than that, you're going to spend like 11 minutes on dinner.
You're so right. I even have yeast in the fridge now. Like, okay, all right, fine. I'll do it. Great.
Okay, so so we're Cabbage Buddies. We're Detroit Pizza Buddies. We're soon going to be Detroit Pizza Buddies. That's going to be like our honeymoon.
We're Burger Eaters.
We're Burger Eaters. That's what really what makes us unique is that we're both fond of burgers.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what brought us together originally for the show. We also apparently both like cheese and eggs.
Yes.
All right. You can find us at spilledmilkpodcast.com and facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast where, you know, we want to hear what's your number one go-to meal?
Yeah, please tell us because I feel like I've learned so much about what the potential of everyday cooking from you. Maybe you're going to start cooking zucchini like I do.
That I feel like that's like something you would say like in a very formal interview or a eulogy.
Oh, geez. Well, Matthew, you know, for your birthday, which hold up, your birthday's tomorrow, Matthew.
Yeah, it was also tomorrow in a previous episode because we rearranged the episode order, but that's fine. Like my birthday can always be like the day after you're listening to the episode.
Great, okay.
Because then like people will just keep sending me like, you know, birthday greetings and like nude selfies and stuff.
Well, hey, everybody, Matthew's birthday is August 28th. I have been preparing for Matthew's birthday a list of all the things Matthew has done for me.
I was joking about the nude selfies. Don't do that.
Anyway, one of the
things
that
I'm... Not in like a shaming sort of way, just like I don't need them.
And I plan to use this list of things that Matthew has done for me as a springboard to my eulogy for Matthew.
Thanks. Oh, wait. So like people who are like you know attention detectives like I know you've been compiling evidence since episode one of like
that Molly's intent to Molly kill
intent,
Matthew
Molly's intent to murder me. I think like that was this case just broke wide open.
It did. You're welcome, detectives. All right. You found us wherever you found us.
And you found us where you found us.
You can leave us a review if you want. Apparently, it's helpful. That's what they always say on podcasts.
That's what they always say. What's definitely helpful is our producer, Abby Circatella.
We could not do this without Abby Circatella.
And until next time, our beepers are going off. There's some sort of bun emergency.
What?
Never mind.
What the heck was that?
Remember earlier, like your dad would get called away to like a bean emergency because he was a bean doctor.
But it wasn't a bun emergency.
I was trying to think of another food, so I wasn't just saying the same thing again. But like bun emergency could be like an actual doctor thing.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
Oh no! And I'm Matthew Amsterburton. I got these vocal pastilles that opera singers use called Vocal Zone.